I'm really excited to see all of you here. I'm Annie Frost. I'm the coordinator for adult program at the library here, and we're delighted to see you. We want you to stay in touch with us. So, any of you who don't know, we have a website. It's PlacidasLibrary.com. It's a wonderful website, and you can find out lots of interesting things about the library and about other goings on in town. So, please check it out. If you are a library patron, have a library card, please be sure that the little box is checked. You have to ask up at the desk to be sure the box is checked for you to get our newsletter by email. We don't mail it out. And we have an ad in the signpost every month with our events. And soon our events will be announced on KUPR as well.
KUPR.org.
As soon as we get that organized, and KUPR is here, not .org, but actually here. And we're very excited. This is the first event that they will be taping at the library. Probably not the first event they've taped in Placidas, but I don't know when it'll run, and they don't either. Any of you who have not listened to 99.9, it's really fun. You never know what you're going to hear. And it always feels to me a little like Radio Fleet pre-Placidas. Welcome. And upcoming events we have on August 22nd, we're going to do music at sunset again. I can't eat it any more than I'm eating it. I'm doing my best. Thank you. August 22nd. It'll be probably out here. We'll have some tents set up, invite you to bring your own picnic and beverages and whatever. We will have some tents and tables, but if you have that, bring that. And we'll have Rock Zone and the Red Road Ramblers and somebody else. The Red Light Ramblers and Tim O'Rourke. And there'll probably be some horseshoes over here and some children's games. The fire department will bring a drop tank, so we'll have a little cool water. And we'll be selling some cold drinks and watermelon, but there's dancing. It's really fun. So please come on out for that. And then on August 29th, probably in the Collin Room at 2 p.m., Rick Farrell, who many of you may know, who's a lovely man around here who's done quite a bit of traveling and is quite a photographer, will be doing a photo presentation on his trip on the Trans-Siberian Railroad, which should be pretty interesting. I don't think it's like what I did on my summer vacation. It will be really interesting. Anne and Don are very, very special to this library. The very first event that we had in the Collin Room when we had just opened this library was Anne and Don celebrating Tony Hillerman's Landscape, which is a wonderful collection of writings by Anne and fabulous photography by Don. And anybody who hasn't seen it and doesn't own it should buy it and at least look at it. It's the pictures of the country that Anne's father Tony made so famous up around Shiprock, and it's really, really marvelous. They will be back. Speaking of Don's photographs, Don is a fabulous photographer, and he is having an exhibit in the Collin Meeting Room of his photographs. That'll be our October show. So I realize I don't know exactly what day the reception is, but be sure to check the website and signpost and all those things I told you to check before to find out when that is, because they will both be back for that. And as most of you know, Anne is an accomplished journalist and a nonfiction writer and a heck of a cook, I think, because she's written some really nice cookbooks, too. And now that she turned her hand to fiction, she picked up a little bit where her father left off, focusing on the young woman that her father had just begun to introduce, Bernie Manuelito. And I'll let Anne take it from there. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, everyone. It's such a pleasure to be here in Placidas. Don and I always love coming up here. We love the drive. And I think it's anywhere in New Mexico. I have to give a shout out to libraries. I think without libraries, I never would have been a writer. That when I was growing up, my family didn't have a lot of money. So we went to the library every week so my mom could get books for me and my brothers and sisters. And I think all of you who serve on library boards, who donate your books to libraries, who donate your money, who donate your time, who come and support libraries, are really very special, and you help make New Mexico a wonderful place to live. And also, you give authors like me a chance to look fans in the eye, which we don't get from Amazon, from BookBub, from all of the wonderful online ways that we can acquire fans. So I love libraries, and I'm really happy to be here today. So thank you for the invitation. As you might suspect, I'm going to talk about my new baby today, Rock with Wings. And to talk about it, I also, of course, have to talk about my dad, because he was the one who invented the wonderful Navajo detectives that now I'm writing about. So I'm going to do this a little bit backwards, while it would make sense to do it chronologically. In fact, I'm going to start with my new book and then kind of work in the information about my dad. So the first question that people ask me a lot about Rock with Wings is, where did you get that title? And the title, where did you get the title and what does the title mean? And the where did you get the title part involves my mom. My mom was always my dad's first editor. When my dad, she was actually the reason that my dad became a fiction writer. My dad started out in journalism, and he was doing really well in journalism, and he loved it. But like a lot of journalists, in the evenings, on the weekends, he would go to his little typewriter in the back bedroom and work on a novel. And so many journalists have that dream of writing a novel. But my dad was making progress, but it was slow progress, because he was working like 60 hours a week as a newspaper reporter and an editor. So he, at one point in his career, he got an offer to go to work for the University of New Mexico. And it meant it was a half-time job, but it would give him a chance to go back to school, to get a master's, and then he could teach. And he and my mom both knew that if he got on that academic schedule, he'd have a lot more time for working on fiction. So my mom really encouraged him to do that, even though it meant transporting our family of six kids to Albuquerque, and it was a big disruption. But my mom encouraged him, and then my mom read every one of his novels many times and gave him good advice, which I think, and also she took care of like the details of daily life, you know, putting out the garbage, doing the grocery shopping, making sure all of us kids had clothes and got fed. So when I started writing when I decided I would continue the Jim Chi Jolie Point series, the first thing I did was to ask my mom what she thought about it. And not only did she say she thought it was a good idea, and give you my opinion on it. So when I was working on the new novel, I had finished it, and my mom had read a couple drafts of it. And I'd come up with a few titles, and they really weren't very good. But I sent them off to my editor, maybe hoping that she would come up with something better. Well, no, what she came up with was worse than what I had come up with. So this was last summer, and my mom was in the hospital, and I was going to visit her. And you know, when somebody's in the hospital, you should never complain to them. They've got enough to think about, and you should never give them bad news. But the thing with mothers and daughters is that mothers can kind of tell if something is bothering you. So I went to see my mom, and we're chit-chatting, and then she says, "So what's wrong, honey?" I say, "Oh, nothing, Mom." So then she says, "Well, how's Don?" I say, "Oh, Don is fine." "Well, how's your dog? How's your son?" Then she starts going through my friends. I think, no, I should just tell her. So I said, "I'm having a really hard time coming up with a title for this book." And she lay there, looked at the ceiling for maybe 30 seconds, and she said, "Well, what about Rock with Wings?" And Rock with Wings is the perfect title, because Rock with Wings is the English translation of the Navajo name for shiprock. And the new novel is two parallel stories. One of the stories has to do with nefarious dealings around shiprock, and the other story is set at Monument Valley. So I was I was really happy to be able to write about Shiprock. How many of you have seen Shiprock? Ah, okay, so you know, Shiprock is beautiful. It's one of the really, of the landmarks of the Four Corners area. It rises about 1,600 feet from the desert floor there to an elevation of maybe 7,100 feet. It's of a volcanic neck, and then running out from it are these beautiful volcanic dikes. My dad used Shiprock in his book, The Fallen Man. And I think that was another reason I kind of wanted to write about it. But besides being beautiful, Shiprock also is very important to the Navajo people. It's mentioned in a lot of their ceremonies, and there are two stories from the Navajo origin myth that have to do with Shiprock. One of the stories concerns giant birds this was when the world was new, and the people had really just emerged. And these giant birds were swooping down and picking them up and taking them to the top of Shiprock and then feeding them to their babies. And so the Navajo hero twins, Born of Water and Monster Slayer, they were charged with ridding the world of monsters. So, of course, they went after this giant bird, and Monster Slayer climbed up Shiprock and waited for the birds to return. There was a mother and a father bird, and he waited for them to return to the nest, and then he killed both of them. And then he looked at the nest, and there were their two fledglings. And those little birds softened his heart. So even though they could have grown up to be monsters, instead Monster Slayer transformed one into eagle and one into owl. And I love that story. So it just makes me happy whenever I see Shiprock. So I was delighted that I could come up with a story that would involve Shiprock. And the other story in Rock with Wings is set in Monument Valley, which is another one of my very favorite places in the Southwest. So one of the problems with writing mysteries is that when you give talks like this, you can't really tell people what the story is because you want them to go to the library and check it out or go down to Bookworks and buy it. So I'm going to read you just a little. This is what Publishers Weekly said about it. This way I won't be tempted to tell you more than I should. Sergeant Jim Chi and his wife, Officer Bernie Manuelito, find their well-earned vacation disrupted by two cases which take them in different directions, with Jim searching for a missing woman and Bernie contemplating a failed drug bust, a mysterious fire, and a solar energy development plan that will have a powerful impact on Navajo land. Well, as you can tell, Bernie is really busy in this book. And I think that was one reason it took me longer to write it than I thought it was going to. And initially, instead of having these two parallel stories, I was going to make it a little easier on myself and just have one crime and have the two detectives working on it together. But I think after being a sidekick for so many years as one of my dad's minor characters, Bernie wanted to be the crime solver. So none of those early drafts had any energy. So finally, when I gave her own story, things moved along a lot better. Well, another challenge people have when they're writing mysteries is how to get the book started. And I had this challenge when I was writing Spider-Woman's Daughter. And with that book, that was the first book in this new series. And with that book, I thought people are going to pick it up because they'll see the Hillerman name. And my dad had so many fans who were so loyal to for so long. So they'll pick it up, they see the name, but then they'll see the Ann part of the Hillerman. And they'll think, who is this new girl? Who is this usurper? And I figured maybe they would give me 4 or 5 pages before they thought. So I knew I really had to get people's attention. So I thought about the start of Spider-Woman's Daughter a long time, and I'm not going to say anything more in case some of you haven't read that. But I knew with Rock with Wings, the same thing would be true. I thought that there would be people, again, who had never read me but had read my dad. So I wanted to get it off in a way that would really perk the reader's interest. So I'm going to read you this. This is from the beginning of the book. And the setup is, Bernadette Manuelito is parked on a dark road, and there's a, she's part of a multi-agency drug interdiction. So she's out there looking for people who look suspicious so she can pull them over and see if they have a trunk full of cocaine or something. But because this is the Navajo land, and it's a dark night, nothing much is happening. So basically, she's just kind of sitting there looking at the stars. And then she sees a car with Arizona plates that's speeding. So she pulls this guy over, and as she's talking to him, she notices that he seems really nervous. So I'm gonna pick up the quote from there. She could see well enough in the headlights to tell that Miller's name was on the document. She's asked for his driver's license and his car registration. His insurance looked valid. She called in the information. Because of the drug bust, the system operated at maximum efficiency. She discovered Miller had no outstanding warrants. The Chevy was registered to him, too. Good, she thought. Just a guy speeding along a usually empty road on a night when a cop happened to spot him. But the man's silence and his nervousness bothered her. Bernie walked back to the sedan. If things went as expected...
Sorry about this.
She would let him off with a stern warning about driving too fast, or maybe a speeding ticket, depending on his attitude. She handed him back the papers. What business are you in, Mr. Miller? Construction. He was chewing his lower lip, and perspiration glistened on his pale skin. The night was warm, but not hot. Unless he had a medical problem, something other than the ambient temperature was making him sweat. Do you have a job out here? Bernie wanted to hear him talk a little more to make sure he wasn't impaired. Yeah, the fingers of his right hand tapped on the steering wheel. When he didn't elaborate, she tried something different. Where is it that you live? Outside of Flagstaff. Flag, huh? Do you like it? Flagstaff was high, almost 7,000 feet, a railroad town on the edge of the Colorado Plateau, cold in the winter. The best thing about it was the view of the San Francisco Peaks, home of some of the holy people, Talking God, White Corn Boy, Yellow Corn Girl. The Hopi held the peaks sacred too, the dwelling place of their kachinas from July until the winter solstice. Miller said, it's quiet, you know? The Grand Canyon is next door. Some nice bars. My dog and I can walk anywhere without getting hassled. He kept talking now. Telling her about his dog with the fondness of someone discussing his child. He spoke too fast, even for a white man. When he finally fell silent, she asked, why are you in such a hurry tonight? No reason in particular, I guess. I wasn't paying attention. You know how that is. You look down at the speedometer and you surprise yourself. Where are you headed? Oh, to Gallup to spend the night, then home tomorrow. And where did you come from this morning? I had a meeting in Albuquerque. Since you're in a hurry, why are you here instead of the interstate? That's a lot quicker. She waited. Avoiding the state police, FBI, and a drug arrest were the obvious reasons. Miller didn't let the silence hang long. Oh, I love the desert. It's not against the law to drive around at night. It was a free country, last I heard. He wiped the sweat off his face with his palm, took off his cap, ran his fingers through his hair. Sir, you seem nervous. She kept her voice neutral. Why is that? Maybe a prescription you're taking? Miller removed his glasses, looked at them, rubbed the bridge of his nose, pursed his lips, and exhaled. Mr. Miller, do you have something in this car you shouldn't have? Amphetamines, cocaine, counterfeit money, fake IDs, stolen credit cards? She smiled at him. If you do, you should tell me now, before I find it and you get in a huge amount of trouble. He was thinking about what to do, she could tell. He took his hands off the steering wheel. He wrinkled his brow. Don't you need a search warrant to look in the car? I'm only asking, sir. I can get a warrant. That takes time, and you said you were in a hurry. If you don't have any contraband, it would be easier on both of us if you opened the trunk for me to take a look. Can we work this out between the two of us? Like you said, arresting me would be a big hassle. She hadn't said that, but she let the comment linger on the summer air. The increasing light from the rising moon made it easier to observe him. His left eye was twitching. Okay, he said, I'll pay you $100 to let me drive out of here. Give me that speeding ticket if you need to. You'll never see me again. $100? Now she had him for speeding and for attempting to bribe a police officer. $500, that's all I've got on me. I don't want any more trouble. Bernie said, too late. Well, as I mentioned, the other story is set at Monument Valley. And it concerns a film company that's working on a zombie movie. And they're using the Monument Valley scenery as a backdrop. And of course, the police station occupied two offices of the expansive building's lower level. The police station is at the Monument Valley Visitor Center. She introduced himself to Monica, dispatcher, receptionist, answerer of questions, a 40-something Navajo woman. Monica reciprocated with her plans. They weren't related, but of course she knew Paul. The captain was expecting him. Leroy Bahi rose from his cluttered desk. Jim Chi, how long has it been since I've seen you? Back when we worked together in Tuba City. Back when you were a bachelor. If large and in charge was a requirement for police work, Bahi qualified, hands down. After they talked about their mutual friend, Hopi officer Cowboy Dashi, Bahi asked about Lieutenant Leaphorn. I heard about him getting shot. I hope he's doing okay. The lieutenant's getting better. Bahi nodded, glad to hear it. She said, when Margot mentioned you needed some help. He said something about babysitting movie folks. You bet. You get the Hollywood assignment. The movie, Bahi explained, was a horror film with permission from the tribal council to shoot in the park. Mostly what you'll do is make sure their equipment doesn't block the roads. You might have to handle a trespassing call every once in a while, something their paid security can't or won't deal with. Monica said something about starting sooner than I planned. Bahi nodded. I'd really appreciate it if you could start today. I just got a call that somebody out in movie land went for a drive and didn't come back. It's probably nothing, but I could use you now. So here's a little hint. If you ever are reading along and the author says, it's probably nothing, you know it's probably not nothing. So I'm going to read you one more quote, as long as we're in Monument Valley. Let's see here. Okay, so this is Jim Chi continuing as a crime solver. He needs to interview a witness, so he's gone to a new hotel at Monument Valley. And I edited this quote a little bit to not give away anything from the story. He walked into the lobby. A simple, high-ceilinged room made elegant by its stunning views onto the monuments and by the way the architect incorporated nature's panorama as part of the decor. He'd seen the monuments every day that week, but this angle gave him further appreciation for their beauty. Then, a mountain of suitcases and backpacks caught his attention. Was all this luggage on the way to the guest rooms, he wondered, or was it going out with departing travelers? The group had recently arrived, he decided, a noisy flock of predominantly gray-haired women accompanied by a few senior men loitered around the suitcases. Most of the elderlies had name tags on cords around their neck, and wore shorts or khaki pants and hats. He paused for a moment, observing the confusion at the front desk. The registration clerk stood alone behind the counter, dealing with a man in a plaid shirt and a straw hat. From their posture, she decided neither person was enjoying the encounter. A broad carpeted stairway with a wooden railing circled up from the lobby to the through the atrium to the upper story guest rooms. Good, he thought, he could avoid the elevator. The only elevator he knew of in Shiprock was at the hospital, and the only way he would ride in that tight little box would be as a patient on a gurney. A silver-haired woman with big red earrings approached him. Excuse me, sir, are you a real policeman? Yes, ma'am. I'm with the Navajo Nation Law Enforcement. Oh, I heard they were making a thriller out here. I thought maybe you were an actor, somebody famous. No, ma'am. You look handsome enough to be in the movies. Could I get a picture of us together? Okay, I guess. Handsome enough to be in a movie about zombies. You'd have to tell Bernie about this. Millie, she called across the room to a lady in loose jeans and a white blouse. Come take a picture of me with a real Navajo policeman. So, just to balance things out, I'm going to read you one more quote from Bernie. This is from the opening of chapter 17. And Bernie is in the middle of a crime, but she's going to drive out and spend some time with her mother and her sister, Darlene. Morning light nudged Bernie to wakefulness. It was already almost dawn. She ran, showered, had a bite of breakfast, put on her uniform for work later, and headed to Mama's house. As she drove, she thought about weaving. Making beautiful rugs took supple hands and multi-level thinking. Traditional Navajo weavers, like her mother, held several ideas in their minds simultaneously, moving one to the forefront and then another, focusing on the details, remembering the big picture, and making the process seamless. She remembered how Mama could get lost in her weaving, sitting until it finally grew too dark to work, and then stirring as if from a dream to consider what they'd have for supper or to ask about schoolwork. Darlene had the same ability to concentrate. When she was working on her drawings, it was though she was in a trance. Bernie considered herself a practical, down-to-earth person. She liked facts, nailing down loose ends, corralling rowdy details one at a time, and closing the case. She wanted to make the world a better place, not with art, but in a concrete way. Her contribution as a police officer, she figured, was to help make sure people like her mother and Darlene could live in peace. Thanks. So one question people ask me a lot is, what gave you the gumption to think you could continue in Tommy Hillerman's best-selling Big Shoes? And I have to say, I blame my dad for that. If it hadn't been for my dad, I never would have become a writer. But it wasn't, when I was growing up, Dad was not writing fiction. As I mentioned earlier, that's when he was in journalism. But he loved journalism, and I could see his passion for it. And so, after I'd been in college about 4 years and decided I needed a major, I went into journalism, and I loved my career in journalism. I met a lot of wonderful people, and from there, then, I segued into writing nonfiction books. So, at one point, I was really doing well enough with the nonfiction books that I switched my journalism career just to part-time and went on to write restaurant reviews for the Albuquerque Journal. And the other thing, because my dad had been at at the University of New Mexico, he really loved to teach. And after he retired, I could see that he was kind of missing that. So I thought it would be fun to create a little conference where a lot of the writers who he had helped and a lot of the fans he developed over the years could kind of get together and listen to his stories and kind of say thank you to Dad while he was still around to really enjoy it. So we started a program called the Tony Hillerman Mystery Conference. And A couple of years into it, one of our speakers was this writer named Michael McGarrity. Well, Michael was going to talk about the role of landscape in his book, and in his books. And so he, and so Don was part of the whole process there. And Don said, gee, since you're talking about landscape, what if I go out and take some pictures of the landscape you wrote about? So Don went out and took the pictures. Michael gave the talk with the pictures as a background. And my dad was in the audience. And afterwards, my dad came up to Don and he said, you know, that was pretty swell. How come you've never done anything like that for me? It was just, it was like one of those ideas that just comes down from heaven and bangs you on the head. So that was really what gave Don and me the idea for this book, Tony Hillerman's Landscape. And Don and I, well, first I reread all of Dad's books. And then we went to those places he wrote about, and Don took the pictures. And the book was almost done in 2008 when my dad died. So and this is a long story how I got the gumption to continue Dad's fiction, just so you don't forget where we are here. So the book came out, and the publisher, HarperCollins, which was my dad's longtime publisher, said to Don and me, you all should do some book talks. So we did. As Annie mentioned, I think one of our very first talks was here in this library. And then we went all around and gave the talks. And as we would, after the talks, we would say to people, do you have any questions? And inevitably, the second or third question would be, so, did your dad have another manuscript at the printer? Did he have something else in his computer? Was there something that was almost finished? And I would have to say no. And then the person asking the question, I could just see their face fall. They would just look so disappointed. And they'd say, oh, those characters were like my family. I love those stories. I can't believe there won't be any more adventures of Jim Chi and Joe Leaphorn. So after I heard that story, that response maybe 1,000 times, I thought, well, I'm missing my dad, but I'm also missing Jim Chi and Joe Leaphorn. I mean, I've kind of grown up with those guys. And then I thought about Bernie Manuelito. And I thought, poor Bernie, now she is forever doomed to be the one who brings the coffee, the one who, you know, the one who drives Jim Chi around when he has a broken foot. She'll never be able to make that final step to being a real detective. So I thought, well, if I can't do much about missing my dad, but maybe I could try my hand at writing fiction. So I think the response from fans was certainly one thing that really gave me the courage to try to switch from writing nonfiction to writing a novel. The second thing that really helped was the fact that I had written a bunch of nonfiction, so I knew a little bit about how the publishing world worked. So I, luckily, my dad's longtime editor was still around. So I was working on Spider-Woman's Daughter, and I got invited to go to a conference in Washington, D.C. They were giving my dad a prize, and they said, would you accept it? I said, sure. And so Don and I took our little slideshow, and we went to the conference. And the night that they were giving Dad the prize, my dad's agent was there at the same table with me. And I had mentioned this idea to her because I wanted to make sure there wouldn't be any problems with copyright or, you know, any other squirrely legal things I didn't know about. And she said, oh, sure, give it a try. And she said, you know, I'll be glad to take a look at it whenever you're ready. So there she was sitting next to me. So we're chit-chatting about the weather and avoiding the elephant in the room. But finally she says to me, so how's the writing going? I say, well, it's going pretty well, except I'm having some trouble with the plot. She said, well, it doesn't have to be perfect for me to take a look at it. She said, that's how writers and editors work together. I thought, well, yeah, duh. So somehow hearing her say it didn't have to be perfect sort of gave me the courage to finish it up. So I finished it up. I sent it off to her in the end of October. I thought, well, good. I got this out of my hair. I can work on the conference, Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's, and maybe I'll hear from her after the first of the year. So the next week, she called me. And as soon as when I saw her name on the phone, I thought, well, this means she didn't, either the manuscript didn't get there, UPS chewed it up, you know, this is nothing. So anyway, I talked to her, and she said, well, I got your book, and I really like it, and I want to give you a contract. You could have knocked me down with a feather. And that contract was for two books. So that is also how Rock with Wings came to be. So I'm not going to keep you here all afternoon, but I just wanted to say the other thing that, as I mentioned earlier, the other thing that really helped me become a novelist was starting out as a reader. I always loved to read, and I love to read all different kinds of material. And I think some of that was because of both of my parents were avid readers. Our house was full of books and magazines. At the dinner table, we would talk, you know, us kids would say what happened in school. And my mom often would talk about what if she was reading. And I think, and then my dad would talk about, you know, he was having a little trouble with Jim or Joe. They would get in the conversation too. But I think growing up like that gave me the idea that stories were important. And if you're going to be a writer, you have to believe that, because it's stuff like this is fun. But when you're sitting there with your imaginary friends day after day, you need a little gumption to keep you going. So without libraries, I wouldn't have been exposed to so many books, and neither would my dad. As I mentioned, my mom, or I don't know if I did mention, but my mom died in February. And so whenever I look at Rock with Wings, I feel so happy. It's like she still is with me, and I'm really proud of that title. But as I was going through their house... peanut gallery here. Anyway, as I was going through the years of papers that Mom and Dad had accumulated, I realized she had done a notebook on every single book Dad had done with all of the promotion. And one thing she had saved was an interview that somebody had done with Dad. And one of the questions was, what did you read as a boy? And my dad said, well, I read everything I could get my hands on. And he talked about getting books by mail through the Oklahoma State Library. He said, I would send a letter with postage, and I would say, please send me the Hardy Boys and books about aviation and books about war strategy and, you know, exciting adventure stuff. And then he would wait, and the box would come, and he would eagerly open it, and in it would be the history of the Masonic Order in Oklahoma and all kinds of other things that he had not asked for. But he said because there were so few books, whatever those wise Oklahoma State librarians sent him, he read. And he said in retrospect, he thought that kind of broad reading really prepared him first to be a journalist and then to be a writer on his own. So I like to say that my books are in libraries now, and libraries are in my books. So I want to read you one final quote. This is from Rock with Wings. So Bernie has been, again, working on the case, but she's taking a break, and she's gone to visit her mother. And she's in the house, and she notices on a side table some new magazines and some catalogs that she hadn't seen before. So she says to her, she has a conversation with her mother about it. Mama said, Stella got them at the library on that free shelf. She saw one of my old rugs in the catalog with the blue cover. Look how much they have for a starting bid. Bernie thumbed through to find the page. The full-color photograph showed the rug to good advantage. I remember watching you make that rug when I was a little girl. Then we drove it over to the Crown Point auction. Mama laughed. Only rich people could buy it now. They could buy a refrigerator for that money. They could get a refrigerator and have enough left for one of those rugs that look like Navajo. You know, the ones they make in Mexico. Bernie chuckled. You did beautiful work, Mama. The world doesn't have many women who know how to make something so fine. That rug is worth more than 20 refrigerators. It's priceless. priceless. Well, that's how I feel about libraries and about people like you who come out on a Saturday afternoon with so much else to do to listen to somebody like me talk about herself. So thank you so much for being here. I'd be glad to answer any questions. Yes, sir.
So in Rock with Wings, you introduce a new character, and that's Timmy. And I'd love to have you, without spoiling anything about the story, go, why did you see the need for the new character, and how did you come up with her?
Okay. Well, Jim Chee is in a new place. And so, and every business, of course, has people who are lovely to work with, and then people who are kind of grumpy and difficult, and who give a new guy a hard time. And I thought, I mean, here's Jim. He didn't have enough trouble. I thought it'd be kind of nice to stir things up a little bit. I worked with a woman lieutenant with the Santa Fe Police as one of my advisors. And she was very politic. She didn't really say anything much about anybody, but I just could kind of tell that she probably was one of those people, kind of like Officer Cinny, that you would not ever want to get on her wrong side.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
I certainly enjoyed the development of Vernon's character in your two books. I know you heard this question before, but in an interview you did some time ago, you were asked about Jodie Horn and where you plan to go. You said, I think, something like this. I haven't decided because of the complexity of his character. Where are you with Joe now?
Well, you know, they call them mysteries for a reason. But I can tell you that any writer who inherited the wealth of characters who I did, and particularly a character like Joe Leaphorn, who had been the mainstay of the series for 30 years, would have to have some serious psychiatric help if she did anything too awful to him. So.
Well, you've already done that. So.
Well, I've done it, but I don't want to say anything because there's somebody who's just reading right. Spider-Woman's Daughter right now.
Right.
Thank you. But yeah, no, Joe's is an important character to the series. I think one reason I dealt with him the way I did in Spider-Woman's Daughter was that he was really my dad's favorite character. And I thought, this is my first novel, and I'm taking a big leap. And to take on this character was a little more than I thought I could handle for that book. But now that I've got two of them under my belt, I'm kind of feeling my oats. So, we'll see what happens.
Well, I thought at the time when that happened that you're just putting him in the background until you decide what you're going to do with him. So, maybe that's true.
You're a pretty smart reader.
So are you going to answer your husband's suggestion about...
Well, I have a question here from the front about what's next.
Yeah.
Well, thanks to the wonderful reception that the fans gave Spider-Woman's Daughter. It was on the New York Times bestseller list for 2 weeks, right when it first came out, which I don't think hardly ever happens to a first novel. Thanks to that good reception, HarperCollins thought that maybe there was some potential here, and said so they offered me a new 3-book contract.
Yay.
So now I'm working on the third one in the series, and I'll have 2 more after that. Thanks. And after that, I don't know, but I think when I'm working on that 5th book, then I will hopefully have figured it out.
Any questions?
Don and I have some books. We have some copies of Rock with Wings, some paperback of Spider-Woman's Daughter, and a few of the Tony Hillerman Landscape. So we would be glad to sell you some. And if any of you brought your own, I would be delighted to sign them for you too. And I'll just sit out there in the shade.
It does benefit the library when you buy them.